the San Francisco Experience Podcast, brought to you by Jim Herlihy, independent commentary from a Silicon Valley perspective for a global audience, featuring newsmakers, thought leaders, and authors. Season 26, Episode 15, Jimmy Lai on Trial, Why the Outcome is So Important to U.S.-China Relations. Talking with Sebastian Lai. Hello, Sebastian.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Jimmy Lai is a 76-year-old media mogul, self-made billionaire, and outspoken leader of Hong Kong's democracy movement. He's run afoul of the CCP and the Chinese government, and he's currently serving a 5-year, 9-month sentence, three of which have been in solitary confinement, for unlawful assembly and a leasing dispute. But now he's being prosecuted for more serious charges, namely the national security law. He's accused of colluding with foreign forces and for publishing seditious material. Named as co-conspirators on trumped-up charges are several foreign citizens, including Benedict Rogers of Hong Kong Watch and James Cunningham, former U.S. Consul General in Hong Kong and chairman of the Committee for Freedom in Hong Kong. Freedoms in Hong Kong are rapidly eroding. What happened to the open, free society of Hong Kong with limited government, the rule of law, independent judiciary, and rules-based order? And why does Beijing regard Jimmy Lai as such a threat? Yes, he's been vocal in his opposition to the CCP and the Chinese government, and that probably explains why. But his activism has come at great personal cost to him and his family. An attempted assassination, the firebombing of his home, and photos of his children plastered around Hong Kong, making them targets. Yet Jimmy continues to stand his ground, a man of faith with strong principles. With us today is Sebastian Lai to talk about his father. He's working to build international support to free him. Sebastian joins us in San Francisco. Again, Sebastian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Sebastian, tell us about yourself and your campaign to free Jimmy Lai.
So, as you mentioned, my father is Jimmy Lai. You know, to be honest, I guess nobody really ever thinks that they're going to be campaigning to free their father. Essentially, my father was arrested more than 3 years ago at 76 ED, the oldest political prisoner in Hong Kong. They arrested him using the national security law, and they sent 500 people to raid his newspaper, arrested his colleagues as well, in what a lot of people call the death to press freedom of Hong Kong. And his trials since then have been highly politicized. To give an example, the unauthorized assembly charge that you were talking about, that was for lighting a candle and singing in prayer at a Tiananmen Square vigil. Hmm. And for that, he got 14 months, which is, you know, as I'm sure very excessive and completely ridiculous, given that you're commemorating all these people that were killed by the Chinese government. In light of that, I've been campaigning to free him, because he's not going to get a fair trial in the Hong Kong system.
And you've been traveling the world to do this, so kudos to you. And currently you're here in San Francisco, and we met yesterday over lunch, and I was very impressed with the presentation that you made. But Sebastian, who is Jimmy Lai? Please give us a brief biography and tell us about his life.
My father was born in the 1940s, in late 1940s in China, in Guangzhou. At that point, Communist China had just taken over China, so conditions were miserable, and so he escaped. He escaped from Guangzhou and went to Hong Kong. And it's actually quite a sweet story, because he was working at a train station in Guangzhou to feed his twin sister when he was 9. And that's, so he'd essentially make his living on tips. And one day someone turns around to him, and instead of giving him money, hands him a half-eaten bar of chocolate. And he eats that. And I don't know if you remember the first time you've had chocolate. Yes. But for a starving kid in mainland China, it was the most amazing thing ever. And he immediately, my dad asks the man, he turns around and asks the man, where are you from? And the man says, Hong Kong. And so for dad, was like, he thought, well, Hong Kong must be paradise. And then I have to make it to Hong Kong one day. And he kept the promise to himself, and he arrived in Hong Kong at 12.
So at 12 years old, he stowed away and made his way by himself to Hong Kong when he was 12.
On a fishing boat, yeah. And he tells me stories about how the fishing boat was filled with vomit because people, all these other people that were also stowing away were just hurling everywhere. And it was, conditions were horrible, obviously. And the day he landed, he had to pay off his debt. So he started working at a glove factory the moment he landed. But he always tells me that, you know, it was one of the happiest times in his life because he knew that in Hong Kong he had a future.
And from there, he went to work in a garment factory. And then through his teens and into his 20s, he did very well. And he ended up creating his own garment company when he was in his late 20s, right?
That's correct, yeah. So he created this, he became, he eventually worked his way up and opened his own clothing company called Giordano. That's still around today, which he no longer owns, and that's a story for a bit later. He created Giordano, and Giordano was, you know, if you think of a precursor to Uniqlo, and actually the founder of Uniqlo says that Giordano was one of his inspirations. But the real turning point in my dad's life, besides escaping to Hong Kong, was in 1989, when the pro-democracy protests were happening all over China. Dad was incredibly, he was very hopeful, because he thought, here's all these people who want the same freedoms that they have in Hong Kong. Hong Kong didn't have democracy, but it had rule of law, free press, and free speech. And he knew what he managed to do with all these freedoms, not just financially, but in terms of, you know, human dignity, of having these liberties that are protected in Hong Kong. And he felt that if China had these freedoms, it could only flourish on a financial level, obviously, but also on a human level. And so he was very hopeful. They printed shirts in Giordano with the heroes of Tiananmen Square. And when the crackdowns, when the Tiananmen Square massacre happened, and the government ruled, that Li Peng ordered the government, the army, to open fire on the students, roll them over in tanks, he was incredibly heartbroken, as was many people in Hong Kong. But that was a moment he realized that, you know, this place that had given him so much, he had to protect it, because he knew that the handover was happening in 1997. And so he felt a responsibility, and he started Next Media, Next Magazine, and then Apple Daily, with the idea that information is choice and choice is freedom. So he wanted to give the people of Hong Kong an alternative source of information from the other newspapers who had started to pander to China. And so for the next 30 years, that was the message. They kept, being pro-democracy, anti-corruption, and really a thorn on the Hong Kong authority side. And actually, the reason why he no longer owns Giordano is because in 1995, Li Peng, the butcher of Beijing, I think in an interview essentially said that he needed to do the Tiananmen massacre or whatever it was. And Dad, in an op-ed piece, called him a turtle's egg with zero IQ. And when you call the premier of China a turtle egg with zero IQ in Hong Kong, it usually does not go that well for your business in China. So all his Giordano stores were closed in Shanghai. And he essentially had they issued an order saying, look, if you either apologize or we'll close everything that you have, like all your manufacturing plants and whatnot. And Dad knew at that point that he didn't want them to hold that over his head for the rest of his life. And he sold all of Giordano, which was, you know, doing very well, growing very quickly, growing, but he sold all of that and then focused on the newspaper. And this brings us to 2019. Now, as you mentioned before, he's always had threats to his life, firebombs. But it really was in 2019 after the protest in 2019 and 2020, when the national security law was passed, that they had a mechanism to essentially use the legal system and actually weaponize the legal system to attack my father. And so he's been arrested since then, and he's been in a maximum security prison since.
once he was arrested on these trumped up charges, as you said, for unlawful assembly, for lighting a candle, saying a prayer, and a lease dispute. But of course, the new charges in the current trial more serious, and that's dealing with the national security law. He's a British citizen, so he has a British passport. He tried to have a British attorney, a barrister, to come and represent him before the court. But at that point, the judges ruled no, they wouldn't permit him to be represented by counsel of his own choice.
Yeah. So that's just one of the signs of the new Hong Kong legal system, which is completely broken. I mean, mm-hmm. to give an idea of the current situation that he's facing in the national security law trial, there is no jury. There is three government-appointed judges. The security minister had boasted of a 100% conviction rate, which is again, I think we need to take a step back. That any person that boasts about a 100 conviction rate is almost it's authoritarian, essentially, right? And that is the situation that he's facing. So I mean, not getting his lawyer, obviously, it also shows how the relationship between Hong Kong and the rest of the world has changed. But it is really just a small symptom in a legal system that has been perverted and used to crack down on my father, but also other people who believe in democratic values. And mm-hmm. just the belief alone. There's 1,800 political prisoners in Hong Kong.
And tell me, you have not seen him or talked to him in 3 years, is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. I left Hong Kong a bit after the national security law was passed. And within 7 days, he was arrested. They arrested him, they arrested his colleagues. And so it wasn't safe for me to go back now, especially now that I've been campaigning for his freedom. It's even less safe for me to go back. And I always joke that dark humor, but that I can go back. I just won't be able to leave again.
That's right. Well, yes, yeah, dark humor indeed. So effectively, you can't return home. You can't go back to Hong Kong. You're currently living in Taiwan, but you're spending a good deal of your time traveling around the world, rallying support to raise his case, to raise consciousness, and to get other governments to intercede for him. Tell us about the Committee for Freedom in Hong Kong, which is chaired by Jim Cunningham. Tell us about that organization, what they do, and how they've been helping you in trying to free your father.
So Ambassador Cunningham has been instrumental in the support in sort of this campaign to free my father. And we're incredibly grateful for all the work that they've done. It really is about shining a light on what's happening in Hong Kong at the moment, and really making people realize that within the span of 5 years, it went from a place with free speech, free press, and rule of law, to now what is essentially a police state. If anybody's interested, they could look at Article 23, which recently passed in Hong Kong. And that gives broad and wide-ranging power to the chief executive to criminalize any national any affront that they deem to be any affront that they deem to damage national security, which is obviously very open to interpretation. And it also has wide-ranging consequences because it's not only within Hong Kong. It also pertains to any offenses that is done overseas that damages Hong Kong national security.
Now, yeah. Of course, Hong Kong for over 100 years has been a business center, and has been a magnet for foreign investment. Of course, we've seen companies from all over the world, the United States, Europe, the rest of Asia, set up regional headquarters in Hong Kong in large measure due to the fact that there is the rule of law, there is an independent judiciary, there is respect for contract law, that there's also that there is rules-based order. So as the judiciary becomes more compromised, less objective, what impact is that having also in terms of corporate investment? Are companies taking a second look at Hong Kong? Are companies fearful that, given the fact that the judiciary is not as independent as it once was, that enforcing contracts, for instance, will be difficult?
people vote with their feet in the end of the day. And over the last few years, we've seen a lot of people either cut down on the Hong Kong work staff or leave Hong Kong entirely. I think every business faces a different matrices of issues. But one thing is sure is that the cost of doing business now in Hong Kong is much higher, mm-hmm. right? And what I mean by cost, it means that when I say cost, I mean if one of your employees is suspected to have, pro-democracy leanings, which again, most multinational corporation having people in Hong Kong will have these kind of employees, and they express it in Hong Kong, there is easily a possibility that they could be arrested under the national security law. And national security law, companies also need to give information to the government if the government requests it. Mm-hmm. So not only are the employees in more danger now, so are the client information. And so, yeah, I think, people obviously, everybody has to do that cost-benefit analysis, but this is the new normal. It's a new normal where you're not allowed to say what you want to say. There's no free press. You can't criticize the government. The government has essentially become infallible. And I think a lot of people are waking up to that, or what an infallible government means in the financial center. And it's a very uncomfortable new equilibrium.
Let's come back to the trial itself. It's been going on for several months now, has it not?
Yep. It's since December of 2023.
And so it's been going on since December of 2023, number one. Number two, who finally represented him? Who is his counsel?
So he's got a local counsel, which are very, very good. But to be honest, it's pretty depressing to watch, because a lot of his colleagues that were arrested before, who've been in jail for 2 years and haven't been, and are awaiting sentence until the end of my dad's trial, have turned witness against him. Mm. There's also been a report by the Washington Post about some of the other witnesses being tortured, allegations of torture. So it's a textbook show trial. I mean, mm-hmm. it's one of those incredibly depressing things where instead of going directly for my dad, the Hong Kong government wants to put out this whole show and essentially have ruined the lives of so many people around my father in order to give a sliver of legitimacy to what they're doing to him.
Now, is the trial being covered in the local press, local TV, local media in Hong Kong?
From my understanding, relatively sparingly.
Okay. Now, I had also read that the diplomatic corps, such as it still is in Hong Kong, that represent diplomats from a whole host of different countries were attending the trial, and they were visibly attending the trial. They wanted, I guess, as a show of support, and also as a show of support of, we're watching you. We're watching these proceedings. Is that your understanding too?
Yeah. And we've been incredibly grateful of that, because the only thing that's stopping the Hong Kong government, or at least pausing them from doing horrible stuff to my father, is that they know that the rest of the world is watching.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much longer will this trial drag on?
I have no indication of that. I don't know.
What is the possible sentence, since it is a show trial, and you have a sense of the verdict will be a foregone conclusion, he'll be found guilty.
Yeah.
What kind of sentence will he be looking at?
So under the national security law trial, and this is not just in my father's case, but for everybody, it's a maximum sentence of life in prison. For my dad's age, at 76, even 5 to 10 years in a max security, it amounts to about the same.
Oh, absolutely.
As life in prison, yeah.
Absolutely. What action has the British government taken, since he holds a British passport, the U.S. Yep. government? And I saw that you also, you went to Canada, to Ottawa, you testified before the Canadian Parliament. I know you've been in Australia rallying support there. Tell us how the British government, the U.S. government, and other governments have been stepping forward, or what have they been doing to make their views known that this is a show trial and they want your father released?
So we've been incredibly grateful about the moral clarity that the U.S. has shown on that case. Immediately when he was arrested and when he was sentenced to the tenant-landlord dispute, the State Department released, the U.S. State Department released statements saying how ridiculous it was. And the support that we've been getting in the US has been incredibly bipartisan. I think it really speaks to the American spirit and experience of a man like my father, who has given up everything for his belief, for the belief of democracy and freedom. So the US have been incredibly great. The UK, as you mentioned, my father is a British citizen. The UK took a bit of time to get going, but once Lord Cameron, who's now Foreign Secretary, but used to be Prime Minister, became Foreign Secretary, he really got the ball rolling on that. And I met him. He told me that they would do everything they can to release my father. And I think a day after, they've called for his immediate and unconditional release. The Canadians have also been incredible in my father's case. You know, they passed a unanimous consent, both the Parliament and the Senate, to call for his immediate release. We've just been very grateful for the support that we've been getting, and we know that this pressure. We know that this pressure works on the Hong Kong government. Australia, for example, recently had a journalist that was arrested in China. They got her released because they mentioned that at every single bilateral engagements with China. So the journalist Chang Lei is now back home with her family. So I'll keep pushing until I see my father again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Hasn't he been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, my father and four other Hong Kongers have been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Mm-hmm. You yourself actually went before a UN subcommittee, did you not, to talk about your father's plight. Could you tell us about that and what action, if any, that the UN committee would take?
The British mission at the UN organized this, and it was attended by many different missions. Actually, most of them democratic, most from democratic countries. And again, incredibly, incredibly grateful for the support. In terms of what has been done, special rapporteurs of the UN have called for that release. Oh, actually, I forgot the EU Parliament also passed it. Unanimous consent motion to for the release of my father, and it's just bit by bit we'll keep putting pressure on Hong Kong, on China to free this man who has given his whole life for the freedom of others.
Mm-hmm. And now you yourself, since you can't go back to Hong Kong, where are you living now, Sebastian?
So I live in Taiwan at the moment and have been for the last 3 years.
I see. And when you're not working to free your father, what do you do for the rest of your professional life?
So we build houses in Taiwan.
I see.
Development and So a lot of hard hats and going to sites and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be outside and to be doing something as fulfilling as building homes. Well, once again, just coming back and as we bring the podcast to a close, coming back to Jimmy Lai, great man, languishing in a prison, Stanley Jail in Hong Kong, with this sham trial going on. We don't know how much longer it's going to go on. At some point, has Secretary Blinken been involved, Secretary of State Blinken, has he been involved? Has he raised the issue of Jimmy Lai to his counterpart in China?
I have no clarity as to whether he's raised the issue with his counterpart, but I know the State Department have always been very on top of calling out what's happening to my father.
Mm-hmm. And for instance, as we sit here, we hear this case, this very unjust case and unjust treatment. For listeners who are out there who might be members of Amnesty International, for instance, are there any actions that individuals in the many countries where we have listeners, are there any actions that listeners might take to help? Because one hears a story like this, you can hear the passion in your voice and your dedication. There may be listeners out there who want to help out. Is there some positive way for people to assist the cause and to help Jimmy to get free?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, so we have a support Jimmy Lai Twitter page and web page, but also what my dad does really does speak to you. Please write to your representative, because in the end of the day, that's what people of Hong Kong was campaigning for democracy, for the right to be represented in government. So, please write to your representative, tell my father's story, let the world know what the Hong Kong government is doing to its people. And my father.
In Washington, is there a particular representative in the Congress who has taken up the torch and who's pushing the case forward?
Yeah, so the CCC have been, I should testify in front of them, and they've been incredible. Congressman Mike Gallagher as well. He's been very, very instrumental in helping my father, Chris Smith, along with many other senators and along with many other government officials. So we've been, again, incredibly grateful. And every time I meet them, it gives me this. I know that it really is a marathon, but it really does give me this warm feeling that I got to keep pushing and talk to my father again.
You're absolutely, and I'm sure that you will. Well, Sebastian, in the remaining few minutes of the podcast, what are your closing thoughts about freeing your father, and if you'd share them with our listeners?
Idea of my father being in jail now at the age where most people would retire is obviously a very unusual and actually, well, obviously very painful idea, because by supporting democracy, by campaigning over the last 30 years and staying in Hong Kong when he could have left at any point, he inadvertently decided not to spend that time with us, with his family. Mm-hmm. And so I sometimes think about that. I sometimes think about that, especially around holidays. And sometimes people ask me whether I have asked him to leave or whatnot. And I never did. And having thought about it for a while, and I realized why I never did, because I think at some point in the person's life, they either stand up for their beliefs or they bend. And the reason why the Hong Kong government is so adamant in attacking my father, and the Chinese government is adamant in attacking my father, is because he never bent on these beliefs. He, to this day, he still believes that freedom and democracy is the best thing for the people of Hong Kong. And I am campaigning for that. Was obviously, he gave everything for it, so it was detrimental to him. But to this day, he still believes it. So I'm incredibly proud that. Incredibly proud of what he's doing, and I am incredibly grateful as well of all the people that support it, because it's such a fundamental part of human dignity, being able to choose your representative and say what you want to say, write what you want to write, and have a fair trial.
And Sebastian, how can our listeners follow you?
I don't personally have a Twitter account, but the Support Jimmy Lai would be the best way to follow the campaign.
And is that supportjimmylai.com?
There's a website, and then there's also a Twitter, I guess, X handle.
Which is also Support Jimmy Lai.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay, very good. Sebastian Lai, thank you for joining us today. And your work is an inspiration to us all. Again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Jimmy.
And for our listeners, today's episode is number 521. Listen to us on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, 18 platforms with listeners in 60 countries. FeedSpot has recognized us as a top 25 California news podcast, ranking us number 12. This has been the San Francisco Experience Podcast with Jim Herlihy, coming to you from San Francisco.